This is Borders-ish, a podcast about the boundaries in our lives. I'm Anna Allport.
And I'm Anna Sotomayor.
Music is one of the United States' biggest sources of global influence. Glance at any country's top 40, and chances are American hits dominate. It's a powerful cultural force.
The State Department has tried to harness this potential through the American Music Abroad program. The program, which traces its roots back to the Cold War, sends American musicians all around the world to play music and connect with locals.
Ameya Hadap takes a look at the ways the government uses these programs to promote one story of America, while the musicians sometimes tell another.
What you're hearing is the sound of American diplomacy. These musicians you're listening to are part of the American Music Abroad program. They travel to various countries on the State Department's dime, collaborate with local musicians, and put on workshops for people who want to learn.
It's all about mixing cultures together in a fun way and celebrating art.
That's Brian Plautz. He's the band leader for Aberdeen, a New York-based group that went to Kyrgyzstan and Mongolia through American Music Abroad.
It's surreal. It was really fun. You know, those are both countries that I'm so glad that I was able to go to because I don't know when else I'd have the opportunity.
The program is the direct descendant of the Jazz Ambassadors program. The Jazz Ambassadors started in 1956 and were dotted with stars like Dizzy Gillespie, Louis Armstrong, and Duke Ellington. The 1950s were shaped in large part by the rapid escalation of the Cold War between the U.S. and the Soviet Union. The two superpowers waged their battle for supremacy in countless ways. Proxy wars, coups, alliance building, and diplomatic pressure were common tactics. But winning the struggle also required winning hearts all around the globe. It required connecting to people in other countries, using mediums that transcended language barriers and broke down cultural ones. Mediums like food, art, and often most visibly, music. Hence, the Jazz Ambassadors. Hugo Berkeley directed a film about the program.
The State Department sought to send musicians not only to like Eastern Bloc countries and to the Soviet Union, but to countries that would potentially be susceptible to Russian or Soviet propaganda. So at that period of time, during the late 1950s, when independence movements were happening in the previously colonial countries, so large parts of Africa, India, Southeast Asia, all of those countries were considered fair game in terms of Cold War allegiances, and both the Americans and the Soviets were lobbying quite hard to win these new regimes over to their side. So there was a lot of attention and money and effort invested into American propaganda in those post-colonial and newly independent parts of the world.
The Jazz Ambassadors' mandate was to counter Soviet propaganda about racial injustice in America. Jazz, an art form created by African Americans, would show on the world stage that Black people in America were valued and celebrated. Yet back home, inequality and brutality against African Americans was rampant. The mismatch between portrayal and reality meant the Jazz Ambassadors risked becoming a propaganda machine themselves.
We wanted to understand why musicians who cared a lot about civil rights, usually in the United States, would then go and disavow American racism on the world stage. So there seems to be a kind of paradox there.
These musicians understood the inconsistency of promoting Black American culture abroad while its creators were violently discriminated against at home. So they used their platform and their importance to the American influence operation to say how they really felt and to demand change. Dizzy Gillespie spoke openly about life in the U.S. as a Black man while on tour. And Louis Armstrong took an even stronger stance.
Louis Armstrong was meant to have been, after Dizzy Gillespie in 1956, the second jazz ambassador, late 1957. And when the Little Rock school desegregation crisis broke out in September of that year, he very publicly cancelled that tour and said, "I'm not going to go there unless more stronger action is taken here because my people are being treated like second-class citizens here in this country.
For a program created explicitly for counter-propaganda purposes, the Jazz Ambassadors were having a hard time getting their stars on message.
The State Department planners and the musicians were like living in two parallel universes, or two parallel existences. They each thought they could use the other for their purposes. You know, one tried to direct the other and it just didn't. It's like, I don't think you could, they were two parallel lines.
The Cold War is over now, but American Music Abroad continues its mission of sending American musicians all around the world. And the backdrop of injustice hasn't faded either. So the dilemmas these musicians face remain similar. Here's Brian again.
It's definitely something that we talked about quite a lot. And beyond it just being such a deep history that some people don't necessarily want to get behind, there's the added layer that this was all during the Trump administration. And like, I think it's no secret that, you know, a bunch of musicians in their 20s living in the liberal city of New York are not necessarily gung-ho about the Trump administration. I'm comfortable saying that.
Yet it seems that, though American Music Abroad itself may still be about soft power, its musicians say what they think. They feel they have the ability to portray America as they see it, while also speaking the shared language of music.
It was just so clear to us that there was no... We weren't there to like peddle a specific message. They're like, listen, you like New York musicians, we have no agenda for you. We just want you to go and just play music and teach and learn and be yourselves with no agenda.
In fact, Brian and his Aberdeen bandmates got the opportunity to speak their minds at an American Music Abroad performance for the U.S. Embassy in Russia.
It was to celebrate July 4th. It was about patriotism. And this was like pretty soon after the murder of George Floyd. And they were like, do you want to play some music, play like a, you know, some American patriotic song because it's July 4th. Sure, that's easy enough. But it's like that's such a difficult thing to do, to be like, yeah, let's represent American pride. So like the way we approached it was like a lot of this event was a Q&A. So we just made sure that we laid out our thoughts on like our support of the Black Lives Matter movement, and our patriotic song that we played was Oh Freedom, which was like a protest song used to promote more equity between Black Americans and white Americans. To my Lord
and be free. Oh, it's hard to believe freedom. That the government would continue funding a program that ostensibly does the exact opposite of what it's supposed to. Musicians going on tours meant to burnish America's image are using them, in part, to speak hard truths about the country's flaws instead. That seems unresolvable. But maybe it isn't. Maybe America's image is being burnished using that very same tension. Here's Hugo.
If you look at the development of U.S. propaganda on race through the late 1950s and early 1960s, with the arrival of Kennedy as well in the presidency, there's a movement from trying to manage the issue and say, like, it doesn't exist and Black people have a very happy life in the United States and everything is great, to a more realistic, democracy is messy, it moves forward in fits and starts, but the important thing is that change can happen and that it does move forward. And like the passage of the Civil Rights Bills in the early 1960s would be seen as proof of that. So that was a kind of change in messaging, let's say, from the American government.
The organizers of the Jazz Ambassadors program learned that they wouldn't be able to stop the ambassadors from saying what they thought. So they stopped trying. And they realized that the best propaganda was showing the world what democracy can do. It can allow people to demand better, to use their influence for the good of their communities. That became a big part of the cultural product the State Department tried to sell through its musical diplomacy efforts. And this candor allowed the development of real relationships.
The real success of these concerts were the connections that the musicians made with other people in other countries of many different ethnicities and backgrounds. But it was about that like honesty and that genuine interaction between them that was the real success of the programs. And I think they showed a kind of version of America on the world stage that America wanted to be seen, let's put it that way, that America was very happy to share with the rest of the world.
So, even though the State Department and the musicians it sponsors are parallel lines, according to Hugo, the authenticity of the latter seems to complement the pragmatism of the former. Maybe that's why music is special. It's a language that invites collaboration, that sparks conversation. And it's a language that's founded on true expression. True expression that extends to the artists themselves. By telling their own stories of America, the artists both hold the government to account and demonstrate the unique power of democracy to drive progress. As cultural exports go, that might just be worth the trip.
You're listening to Borders-ish, a 9-part series produced by an audio journalism class at Princeton University. We are your hosts,
Anna Allport
and Anna Sotomayor.
Up next, follow Anna Sotomayor as they explore what home means for undocumented immigrants in the U.S.